Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Ryan.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel this evening, Debbie and Jill. All right, I'm going to read the step, and then the first paragraph is on page 89, and each member of the panel will share for a few minutes on the reading. So, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So, from page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember that they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the right spot of our lives. So,
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
And my sobriety date's October 24th, 1982, and Simple Actions is my home group. And I have a sponsor who remembers that she sponsors me when I call her, and I sponsor people. And I got short notice, which is good, because otherwise I'll have a bunch of lies for you up here. But working with others, step 12, so it tells me I'm going to have spiritual awakening by this point, and I believe that's true today. And I believe that's true for anybody that works the 12 steps. It's a guarantee. But carrying this message to other alcoholics, and it works when nothing else will. That I know that when I'm in trouble, I need to go to a meeting and find somebody that needs some help. And that's always my advice to sponsees when something's yabba, 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 and everything's wrong. It's like, well, why don't you find a newcomer? Because it really does help us more than it helps them. And I was thinking about that line today. It comes later, but how do I know that? And what came to me was how I know that is I'm sober today. And more people are not sober that I have helped than are sober. I don't know if that's a reflection on me or what, but I just think that this is a really, it's a gift. I believe I'm sober through the grace of God. I believe it's a gift available to any of us, and that some of us grab onto it and some of us don't. And so we'll talk about who does and who doesn't later and what to do about that. But I love the second paragraph. The whole, you know, it's like the promises of the 12th step, you know, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to watch new people and to see them help others. And I've been around long enough to see that, and it's an amazing thing to not only see somebody else's life transform, your own life transform, somebody else's life transformed, and then it just keeps going on and on and on. And I'm not even going to say what my tree is called, because it's not called a tree of people that we kind of sponsor each other and our lineage. But anyway, you know, I was thinking about that today, too, because I really still am a loner. I have been in the house for 3 days since the storm. I mean, I've been outside and I've been cleaning up branches and all that stuff. And and I have a wonderful fellowship about me, and it's right there at the other end of the phone, or if I get in the car. But sometimes, left to my own devices, I'm still going to say, I really don't want to do that today. And so it's the fellowship is wonderful, and I stayed sober on the fellowship for a long time. I did work the steps, but I really liked the fellowship part of it. Now I know that spiritual awakening is really about working the steps, and it's about me finding this power greater than myself and the willingness to go to that power, which we'll also talk about later. But truly, it is an experience that I don't want to miss. And I share this often. You know, when I came around AA, I just happened to get in the right car. I got in a car with people that were going to the detoxes, people that were going to the rehabs, people that were going to the jails, and people that were helping other people. That was not my intention at all. I just didn't want to be alone anymore, so I got in the car. I would have gotten anybody's car. I just happened to get in the right car, and I believe that's part of the grace of God, that I just kept coming back and kept hanging with these people, and I'll talk about that a little bit more, too, because it really is that one alcoholic, one drunk helping another drunk where no one else can, because no one else understands. Thanks.
I'm Jill. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 10th, 1996. Simple Actions is my home group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people. And it's funny because when you get to step 12, you know, I it wasn't what I expected. You know, I kind of really wanted a tiara, something to show that I really had a spiritual awakening. But all it was for me was... all of a sudden, I'm able to know things I couldn't possibly have known, hear things I could never have heard, and then intuitive thoughts come to me that sure as heck don't come out of my self-centered being. So, you know, it wasn't what I expected, but it was a lot more. So when I come in here, it's like, and I can lose it too, by the way. I'm going to tell you that right now. I can lose that connection. I don't necessarily lose my foundation, but I can short-circuit it. And one of the ways I short-circuit it is if I don't reach my hand out. The newcomer in here, it isn't that I have all this wonderful wisdom that I'm going to give you, but what it is you're a mirror to who I am. And I can't see myself as I really am, so I really need other people. And I need a reality check that this is my alcoholism. And if I'm not doing that, I'm shortchanging myself and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because this program is what gave me a life that's worth living today. Back when I was getting sober, there was an old man. I was a bad drunk. I was a really pretty damaged person when I got here. And my home group, thank heaven, people in AA know what to do with a drunk that can't hear anything. And they had me going up to this nursing home to visit this man who'd been sober like 40 years at the time. And he wasn't able to get out anymore. And I kept thinking, well, this is going to be fun. You know, what is this? What am I going to say? And what happened was, as I started visiting him, I started seeing how we were similar. He started telling me stories and talking about AA and how it came of age in Tidewater. And I'd been going up there for a couple of months or so, and I can remember telling him, you know, one day I said, Bob, I don't know if I can do this. I just don't have what you have. And being who he was, he could never remember my name. And he said, girl, you just keep doing what you're doing. It's one drunk talking to another. And in that, what happened to me was it started melting that icy barrier around me. And I remember that today when I talked to a newcomer, that there it's not that people aren't doing what we're suggesting. They can't hear any better than I did. And so if I lose sight of that, of what I've been saved from, I'm almost guaranteed to go back to it. So the thing about contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot in our lives. I have come in the years I've been here, and Debbie's one of the people in the group that I really call friends in this program. They're people that I've been closer to than my own family. And they're people I can talk to more directly than I can my own family. And as I've been here for a while, I get to go places, I meet people. Being down in Atlanta this past year in the International, I ran into people I hadn't seen in eons. All of a sudden they pop up and it's gone. You have this wonderful conversation like you had just seen them a few days ago. And it's kind of interesting because it's like, you know, where else can you go in the whole wide world and walk in somewhere and see somebody you the least expected to see in a foreign place, and somebody from AA pops up and go, hey, is so-and-so still around? And so it's kind of an interesting thing, too, because we can't write this script. It's a power greater than us, and all of a sudden, one day, Kevin over here, I saw him years ago, and one day I finally got the nerve to ask him, say, what's your name? And I realized, yeah, I knew him. And it's like, you don't get that other places. So you remember people you meet in this program, whereas I'm in a very public job, and I forget them every day, you know. And if I don't see them regularly, you don't remember them. But in AA, for some reason, the people in these rooms touch my heart like nothing has ever touched it before. Thanks, that's all I got.
Thanks. All right, turning over to page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment on one of the on page 90, because I don't follow the rules still. So it says, if he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. I think that's a very important thought, because, you know, I don't fight, I don't defend, I don't promote anybody's alcoholism or AA anymore. And this is just on a personal note, I'm sharing, there's a lady at work who's been very sick since June and could very well be an alcoholic, but she flat out said, I don't care if I shoot my liver out, and she's not interested. And so it's a very uncomfortable feeling inside of me to say, and she knows I'm sober and she knows I'm in AA, and she's the only one I work with that knows that, because I knew that she one day may need that. And I don't know that she'll ever even ask for help. And it's very hard for me to not waste my time with her. You know, I still go see her and I still go support her, but I don't say, hey, you want to go to a meeting? Hey, you want, you know, she knows we've had conversations. So I just wanted to get that off my chest. And it also talks about on that page, are you willing to go to any length, which asks many times in this book. But the whole thing about see your man alone, I guess this was more applicable when it was first written, and I don't really understand that, because I could, you know, when I got sober, we still did a lot of 12-step calls where you would go in the home, and you still do them occasionally, but it's a rare call. I usually forget I'm on the 12-step list until I get a call. It's like, oh yeah, I am on that list. But we were told never to go alone, to always take two people when you're going to someone's home that you don't even know or wherever they might be. So the book says something different, but when it was written, maybe that was more applicable. Today, I mostly meet people either at the psych center or in AA meetings. You know, occasionally in life, you might find one. I have a brother and a sister who are both sober, and so my life is surrounded by sober alcoholics, which is a blessing. But most of the people that I end up working with and getting close with, I meet at a meeting. You know, my sponsors, I've had three sponsors over the years, and they've always changed because of moves. And like Jill was saying, I still am in contact with them. I go to Maine and see one. I go to Pennsylvania and see one because that's where they're living now. And it's that connection is still there. And the thing with trying, it's not really in this paragraph, but... Again, I don't stick to the topic. Talking about family, it seems like I have a lot of people lately that have family that are either really sick or dying or are, you know, and they want to help them. And all my brother remember, I don't think you can get your family sober. I think that you can certainly lead them to water or someone that can take them to the solution. But I do remember coming home. I lived in Baltimore. I got sober in Baltimore. My brother still lived here, and he was quite wasted. And he's a lot younger than me. We didn't drink together or anything. But I just remember going up to him and saying, you know, it doesn't have to be this way, Kevin. And again, he knew I was sober, and he knew what I did to get sober. And he shared that with me. He's sober like 20-some years now, but he shared that with me like 6 months ago, and it was like, I don't even remember saying that to you, but evidently I did the right thing, so that's a good thing. But anyway, so I just talk to people like I'm talking right now, you know. I love the humorous part. I don't like so much the drama part or the sad part, but I love telling humorous stories of, yeah, you know, I called in sick at the bar because I was hungover, said I had car trouble, and they said, yeah, we know your car's in the parking lot, Debbie. You know, it's like... You know, so I have humorous stories. Now, sometimes they're not so humorous when they're happening, but they're humorous when you're telling them later, because we're funny people and we're smart and we can think up some stuff, you know, about our drinking and how it's okay. It's okay. This behavior is okay. And I do think that that's what people relate to in the rooms when people are sharing. It's like, yeah, that's how I drink. Yeah, oh yeah, that's what happened to me. And yeah, that's nobody ever said that in public before or would admit to that, you know. And it is just they talked about the language of the heart when I got sober, and that's what this is. There's no profit motive. There's no other reason itself that. I'll share this now. In my, I don't know, around 23 years sober, I kind of drifted away from meetings for a couple years, like 4 years. And when I came back, I got another sponsor, because that's one of the things that happened. My sponsor moved to Maine, and I didn't get another one. But anyway, so when I came back, because I was like on a dry drunk and crazy, and so when I came back and got the sponsor that I have now, she is big into service. And that's when people started showing up in my life as sponsees, because up to that point I did service work because you're supposed to and it looks good on, you know, on my AA resume, but it was still all about me. So that switch didn't change for me for a very long time, to where this whole chapter is talking about being other-centered instead of self-centered. And still, I would say 90% of my day, I'm still self-centered, but I have enough time that I can that I get a little bit out of myself. And I have these women in my life that I just love. And my husband says to me, do you really like it when these women come over? Because they'll come over and we'll read the book or we'll go out. You know, we're friends. We're sponsor, but we're also friends. Jill will come over and Tom will talk to her about art, because I don't know anything about it, but those two do. And so it's just an amazing thing to me, the friendships that come up. And it was all against my will, really. So if you're here and you think that none of this works, it's okay. Just keep coming back and following the suggestions, because my life does not look anything like I thought my life would look like. And I'm a whole lot happier because of that. Because, again, I'm a loner. I would just be sitting there drinking and feeling sorry for myself if it was up to me. But this program has brought people into my life that sometimes it's like, okay, I got enough friends now. I have a very full life today, and I'm very grateful for that. But it was nothing that I brought to the show. It was only by working these steps and having that awakening and finding this power that I suit up today and say, okay. Up here it says no. My first answer is always no, but my mouth luckily doesn't say it. There's enough time to have that little pause and say, sure, I would love to do that. Thanks.
Okay. I'm going back to page 89. There's a sentence here that's really important about this whole chapter. It says, carry this message to other alcoholics. I'm embarrassed to say how long it took me to realize what the message was. I'm always trying to dress things up or personalize it or make it more appealing to you. And that's called manipulation. So it's a hard one to get past. I think I'm getting there finally, but it's like, just tell the truth. And it's important for me to say it out loud to people, because what I do when I do that, I start getting more and more honest about what it is I'm telling you. I can't tell you how to about your finances or your marriage or anything else. I can tell you how I got sober, and I got sober by surrendering to the process in this book. And me, I always thought, like, no, it's got to be more than that. You know, that's not enough. And the truth is, that is what happens. That is what happened to me. So in here, when it says. Tell them enough about your drinking habits and symptoms, experiences, to encourage him to speak of himself. That doesn't mean I get on a drunk log and just, when your eyes glaze over, I know you've had enough. I say something and encourage the other person to talk. And if I can, when I do that, and I do it much better now than I ever used to, I can start hearing them, what they're telling me. Because, and my sponsor said for years, you have a hearing problem. I thought, I do not. It was, I do. Because I'm already, when you're talking, I'm already thinking about what I might say next. And that's not listening to you. That's just me trying to run the show all over again. So in here, in the bottom one, it says, be careful not to moralize or lecture. That was another habit of mine. I would get on the AA soapbox and try to tell people what they needed to do, you know, and that will drive people away faster than anything in the world. Is when anyone thinks I'm telling them what to do, I was a hard-headed drunk, and I never realized how much if you told me to do something, by God, I wasn't going to do it. You know, I'm going to dig my heels in. You are not telling me what to do. So I have to realize that 90% of the people, God puts people in front of me that are carbon copies of me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can almost guarantee that they're digging their heels in going, ain't happening. So what I have to say a lot of times is, how is that working? Well, you did that. Well, how's that working? And so let them be their own motivation. Because one thing I do know, I'm powerless over alcohol, that if I don't learn to do this, I'm going to go back to drinking. And that's the message I try to hand people, is left to my own devices, I always drank again. So when I'm sharing, I don't say you as much as, oh yeah, I did that, this is what I did. And to say, you know, like a person's having problems getting to meetings, you know, I said, you know, I had to really make myself accountable, and I'd ask another person to go with me. I don't tell them they have to or they should. I tell them what I did. And or else I try to personalize it and say, well, this is what I had to do, rather than trying to make someone do something that they're going to rebel against. In here, when we say, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. And I was doing that the other day with someone, and she had something she needed to tell me that was earth-shattering. And she said, I gotta tell you this. It's so bad. And she told me, I went, that's not so bad. I did that. And so it's like you relieve that angst that people have inside of them, that they can't say certain things because they're afraid of I'm going to be judging or anything. And Lord forbid for me to judge anybody or anything. You know, and so sometimes all I'm doing is giving them comfort or giving them a little bit of a lead in. Yeah, I did that, and it didn't play out well, and blah blah blah. So it's like Debbie. It's easier to tell the humorous stories. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really hard to tell the honest embarrassing stories, and sometimes that's where I've put a person more at ease when I said, "Yeah, I know what you mean. I did that." So I'd like to have everyone believe that I came in here and drinking was my only problem. And sure wasn't. And it's like, and the more longer I've been here, I happen to know that probably is none of our problem. That we probably all have stuff.
Thanks, Drew. That's like that.
Thank you. All right, continue on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
All right, so it's an AA meeting. This is where I'm going to talk about drinking. So when I came, I was introduced to AA a few different ways. I have like these three, I call it my golden thread, these three specific events that happened that got me into AA, or at least opened the door. One was I was a nursing student. I was a bartender. The bar burnt down, so I had to find a job, and my husband wanted a boat, so he thought I should be a nurse because they made a lot of money. And so I said, sure, because that's what I do. You know, I'm a chameleon. And so I'm in nursing school, and one of my fellow students, who was in social work or something, took me to an AA meeting. Now, I never drank with this woman. I have no idea what she thought, unless I'm like blah, blah, blah about my drinking, because I'm like wide open. I am not a closet drinker. I'm not a hide your bottle drinker. I'm a down and dirty, let's fall down and get drunk kind of drinker. And so she took me to an AA meeting, and the men there were 75 years old. I was 27, and they were all smoking, and I'm like, oh my God, no, this is not the answer for me. And then I had the opportunity to sit in the back of a police car from having a little bit too much to drink, and the judge was a recovering alcoholic, and my lawyer knew that, and he said, you need to go to AA. The lawyer said, you need to go to AA. Now, my ticket was in December, and I might have gone to a couple of meetings before my court date, which was in March. And so that in the back of that police car, I remember hearing, okay, we gave you a chance to stop on your own, Debbie. Now we're going to try this. And the other thing that happened was at this school that I worked at, I was going to nursing school and I was a student aide at the community college. And the lady that ended up being my sponsor down the road, also as I'm talking about, oh my God, DWI, blah, 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 blah. Well, just so happens that she's sober for 7 years, and she loans me a copy of her big book, which is exactly what it says to do later on in here. So I had those three things, and so I have to go to AA. The judge says, I think it's a great idea for you to go to AA for 18 months, three times a week, or go to jail. And I'm smart. I don't want to go to jail. And so I'm going to these meetings, and it was not my idea. I did not want to quit drinking. I was that person they were talking about that, no, I'm not willing to go to any lengths. And so, but I had to go to 3 meetings a week. And so I stayed sober out of fear. I want to say it was about 3 months, because I went to court in March, and I remember being thrown off the boat in June when I decided it was time to get drunk, because I have never taken a social drink in my life. Like I said, if I'm going to drink, it's going to be, let's just do this. I also know what it talks about there with that whole mental obsession and that physical compulsion. I knew what it meant when they said the first drink gets you drunk. I knew what that meant, because I knew that if I started drinking, I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know. I know I'm not going to stop until I'm stopped somehow. Something stops me. And so I knew what that compulsion was, that I'm going to drink. And I've later heard it's much easier to explain it, that when you ask somebody what happens when you take a first drink and they go through all the blah, 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 like I just did, the really easy answer is I take another drink. That's what happens when I take the first drink. I take another drink, and then I take another drink. And so anyway, I have no idea where I was going with that, but I love talking about drinking because I loved drinking. And so I get to talk to other people about that, and then we get to talk to them. It talks early about we are uniquely qualified to talk to people. I love words, and I just like to be unique, and so I like that that's in here. And also this queer mental condition, you know, I had all kinds of reasons. I didn't want to quit entirely, but I knew I needed to cut back at certain times, and I knew I needed to slow down at certain times, but to give it up completely was never my idea at the beginning. And so I like to share that with people that aren't first-timers in here. And there are people that come in here and never drink again, and that's a wonderful thing because they're already to that point of desperation that we get to. I wasn't there when I first came around, but alcohol is a great persuader. And so, you know, we've all got the things that we try. You know, I've got self-help books that I did read mine, though, but because I love to read is the only reason, but I never applied any of them. The gym was always a good idea. I need to change my diet. Obviously, he's the wrong boyfriend. I need to go skating. That's how I got my beer truck driver husband, was I was going to go skating one night to get healthy, and I couldn't find the skating rink, but I knew where the bar was. And so I went to the bar instead of going skating. And so I just, none of those things worked. And what really finally convinced me, well, alcohol convinced me, but I still had that thing of, I know that once I drink, you know, there's nothing going that's going to stop me. But I still thought that I could control when I took that first drink until after I got a little honest. Because, you know, when they talk about self-honesty, I can be brutally honest to you, but I cannot be honest about myself at all when I come here. But I knew that I would tell myself I was a spree drinker. I would drink every weekend, and I was a bartender. I worked at a day shift, and I knew those drunks depended on me, so I had to get to work. I was always at work. And, you know, Monday, I would wake up, oh, my God, I'll never do it again. I swear I'll never do that again. I'm not drinking anymore. Tuesday, I'm not shaking so bad. Wednesday, I'm eating. Thursday, I'm drunk. And I would have told myself, I'm not going to drink till Friday. I'm going to drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I'm drunk on Thursday. And that's how the progression was for me. And people certainly progress much more than that. But that's where I was with that mental, I don't want to drink till Friday, but I'm drunk on Thursday. How did that happen? You know, how does that happen? And so, but we can talk about this hopelessness because it's a fatal progressive disease. And we can talk about hopelessness where it says the doctor is not likely to do that so much because we have a solution. And that was the thing I wanted to say about my sponsor and service and being available for AA. What I realized not during the time I was not going to meetings, but when I came back was, and what keeps me coming back now, is the absolute most selfish thing I can do is be sober and not share it with somebody else. How did that happen? To not share it with another alcoholic, that you don't have to be that way anymore. You don't ever have to drink again, which is what they told me. And for me to just sit home and say, oh, things are good now. You know, I don't need those meetings. That to me today is not what AA is about. Today, Today, AA is about me showing up and suiting up to be available to someone that walks in that door that doesn't know that it's a solution. Thanks.
You know, when we're doing this, to tell people that we're baffled a lot. When I've been working with people in the past, sometimes I get someone who said, well, I didn't drink that much. I just drank sometimes. And so I tell them about what happened to me, you know, that I couldn't leave it alone. And then we're working a little bit, and all of a sudden this person has an epiphany. Oh, well, you know, I did used to drink a lot at such and such. And then not too much longer down the road, she goes, yeah, oh, yeah, and boy, they had to drive me home. Or I fell off the curb and broke my foot. And it's just like that. I mean, we don't tell people that, because a lot of times a person comes in the room has been really good about shutting things out, you know, not paying attention to them. So I have to realize that people aren't honest about their drinking because they're just downright liars. They don't tell you because they've worked very hard at not looking at it for a long time. And I know that for me, it took me a long time to get really honest about what I did. The kindest thing that anyone ever did for me in the program was back in 94, the lady that's my sponsor today tried to help me. And she called me for one afternoon for some reason, and I'd gone back to drinking. And she asked me, she goes, have you been drinking? I said, and I didn't lie. I told her the truth. I said, yeah. And she goes, you're just not ready. And she quietly hung up the phone. She didn't moralize. She didn't lecture. She didn't try to convince me that I needed to stop. She just said that. That stuck with me so strongly because no one tried to make me believe I was a real alcoholic. I had to come to that on my own. And I only came to it on my own when I was drinking myself to death in my house. And that was a pretty hopeless place to be. It was a pretty dark time in my life. And even when I got here, people didn't tell me, you need to do this, you need to do that. If you're satisfied he's a real alcoholic. I can remember the first time, well, the only time actually, I called my sponsor, and I'd been in the program for a little while, and I called her and I said, tears running down my face. Whenever I get faced with a real truth, I usually cry because it's a little overwhelming. But I said, I really am an alcoholic. And she goes, yeah, we had that figured out. But I know that me telling anyone isn't going to make any difference at all. Everyone comes to it on their own. So can I just tell them something that might thaw that little icy barrier they have around them? Recently, a neighbor of mine came to me because she said, I know that you used to drink and you don't drink anymore. And you've said you're an alcoholic. And I said, yeah, I am. And she goes, how did you know that you're an alcoholic? So I told her, you know, when I drink, I invariably drink more than I intended. And when I want to quit, I can't quit. And then she proceeded to tell me that she's a situational alcoholic. And I said, I haven't read that in this book. And she said, how did you quit? And I said, well, I went to AA. And she goes, whoa, anything but AA. I will not go to AA. And she goes, well, you have a book or something you read, don't you? I said, yeah. And I said, actually, I've got one right here. And so I gave her a copy of the book. In the years in the program, I've had cases of books that I've given away. And very few of them do I see come back in the rooms. But I can't determine what the conclusion of that's going to be. I just give it out, and then God, it's in God's hands. And I tell them the truth about what it is. My cousin was recently here. And she was trying to help a lady whose husband's dying of brain cancer. And my cousin doesn't drink. She's not an alcoholic. But she knows that I am, and she saw me at my worst. And she still, and to this day, goes, I didn't think you were that bad. And it's like she wasn't living inside of me, so I can't explain to her how bad it does get. But she caught her friend, who slept every day until noontime, while my cousin was just doing all the housework and take care of the husband, take him to appointments and stuff like that. And she caught her friend in the closet drinking Jack Daniels out of a bottle. And she was devastated. And I thought it was pretty clever. You had to catch her, you didn't catch on before. And she says, she's drinking. And I said, she goes, how could she do that? Her husband's dying. And I know how she could do that. I know darn well how she could do that. So my cousin said, what can I say to her? And I had to be honest. I said, does she want to quit drinking? She goes, well, no. I said, well, there's nothing you can say. The best thing you can do is leave her alone and let her come to that on her own. And my cousin, she got kind of a little bit mad. And she goes, like, there should be something I can do. I said, if you try to rescue her, you're probably going to be in for a really rocky, hard ride, and you're not going to make any difference. I said, if you care for her, you'll take your hands off it and let her come to her own conclusion. And that sounds kind of harsh. You know, I've heard people say to me before, well, shouldn't you try to make them go to a meeting and stuff? It's like, well, if I try to make anybody do anything, especially a drunk like me, that's not going to play out well, you know? I'm going to tell you right where to go, or I'll just quietly, my MO is I'll quietly leave and never speak to you again. But in both cases, I was faced with, I'll do anything but. I'm not going to AA. I have a brother who's dying of alcoholism, and he said, do you still go to those meetings? I said, yeah. And he goes, I can do anything but that God stuff. And I said, well, why don't you come with me sometime and see what it's like? Yeah, I will. I'll let you know when. And that's been years. And he'll do anything but this. So it's not, getting sober is never for wimps. It really isn't. It's for people who all of a sudden realize that death really could take a long damn time. It's not it may not be a cakewalk, and it may not be a quick trip, and it may be, and that's, you know, I just don't do pain as well as I used to. And I said, I'm not really willing to play with this but so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right, now on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of mind and body which accompany it. Keep his attention mainly focused on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
Okay, so here's my attempt at a joke, because when Jill was talking, so there's two ladies standing at the graveside. The funeral just left, and, you know, poor Bill, he died, and, you know, he drank a lot. And the one lady said, well, did he ever go to AA? Oh, no, he wasn't that bad. So that's my joke. So there's two things. There's a lot of things I'm grateful for. There's two things that in early sobriety that I'm very grateful for. First of all, that when I went out for those months before I decided I really am an alcoholic and need to get sober, and I still had to go to 3 meetings a week, and I still had to work with Avril, who was going to be my sponsor one day, no one said, don't drink, Debbie. You really shouldn't be drinking, Debbie. I remember telling Avril, you know, that I went out, and Avril is the lady I worked with, told her I went out and got drunk. And she said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to keep drinking. And she said, you know where I am, you know? Because I wasn't convinced. Being convinced, I was not convinced, you know? And so the other thing that I'm terribly grateful for, once I was convinced and I came back, because I didn't want anything to do with that God thing, no one said, you have to do this. Well, that's not, I'll get to that in a minute. No one said I had to believe this. No one said I had to follow this whatever course, this process, this whatever. there was a man in Baltimore that would say, AA gives you the right and the time to find your own God in your own way and your own pace. And my pace is very slow, but I have a tremendous God today. What I did have to do, though, and it talks about this maybe in this paragraph, somewhere in this book, it talks about having to be willing. And so what willingness looked like to me, because willing is an action. And so what I had to be willing to do was when I got a sponsor, when I finally quit sponsoring myself, because I got the book, I'm smart, you know, I can do this. Obviously not. So when I decided to follow the instructions of someone else, she said, you'll get on your knees in the morning and you'll ask God to help you not take a drink today, and you'll get on your knees at night and you'll thank him. And of course I thought, blah, 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 blah. I don't believe and all this. And she said, it doesn't matter. I just need you to take the action. Somehow that now is you need to make your bed, but I don't know. I don't know how that changed to the action that you had to prove to your sponsor that you're willing to now to make your bed. But anyway, my sponsor made me pray, because I did not pray except for, dear God, get me out of this. And so I did that. And I've shared many times, my first prayer was, okay, this is Debbie, because I didn't think he knew who I was. And please help me to stay sober today, and I feel like a phony, and I don't know why I'm doing this. And I got to tell you, you can start that way today, and it's okay, because God is just waiting for one little crack in this skull of mine to even say, oh my gosh, she's willing, she's doing it, she's following the directions. And slow, to me, it's like raindrops falling on me. I just get worn down. I just get softened up, and so I was willing to follow directions. I did not believe they would work. I did not see any point to it. It seemed pretty silly to me, but yet I did it. And by working these steps with the person who had worked these steps, by the time I got to 12, I have had a spiritual awakening. And each time I go through these steps, I have had a spiritual awakening. And it continues to grow, and it continues to be why I come back, is because I have this loving, powerful God in my life that has got a great sense of humor, and I'm just waiting to see what he brings me next, because I could, you know, people that know me, I'm going to cuss one time. You cannot make this shit up. When you have four people in the car with these various different backgrounds with the common denominator of alcoholism, you just can't make it up. We are people that normally would not mix. And yet, you get in the car and you drive to Yorktown and you have a blast, because you have that common bond and you have that common solution. Thanks.
Okay, in here, when it says, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. People have always talked to me about the progression, because I could see that in my own life. You know, what used to be fun and exciting and just, you know, taking the edge off became stumbling blackout drunks. So when I could see the progression, and then that it never lightens up. I had a sponsor who used to say that it never lightens up. You don't all of a sudden one day just have a run of easy, carefree drinking and give you a little bit of hope again. It never gets back. That was my experience. I never got it, you know. But towards the end, I was just drinking to drink. You know, I was drinking, looking for that ease and comfort. It was long gone. So people, and maybe it was because, I swear, in these rooms, you hear what you need to hear. You know, in a meeting, 10 people say 10 different things, and people will hear what they need to hear from different people. And I'm convinced that that's the way this all works. I had a psychologist once that tried to talk to me about alcoholism, and she told me, she says, you don't need to come back. I can't help anyone that won't help themselves. And I thought that was really harsh too, you know, that was like little, you're getting paid for crying out loud, just keep talking. But it was like, and then I had a psychiatrist one time that put a condition on treating me, that I would go to AA. Well, I did what a good drunk does, I just never went back, you know. No one's going to tell me something, but if you talk about yourself, I may hear something that I'll relate to. And up here again it says, tell them exactly what happened to you. Do You know, that's a lot of honesty to tell someone exactly what happened to me. You know, I got something wrong with me that I can't fix, and I need your help to do it. There's some ego smashing and some truth in that. You know, some honesty comes out of that. And it starts, like Debbie was just saying, it starts cracking that rigid wall I build around myself that nobody can get into. It finally, a little crack gets into it, and a little bit of light comes in, and it starts to grow. Back here when it says, stress the spiritual feature freely. I can remember telling my sponsor early on, I don't believe in God. And she goes, that's okay. You don't have to believe in anything. Well, you just do these things. And I was so resistant to what this program was saying and what this book said. Out at Craddock, they had the third and the seventh step prayer on an orange piece of paper. And it must have been because there were more people than me that were hard-headed. I'm a fairly smart person, could not memorize those prayers. She said, would you pray every day? I said, yeah. And I'd be looking at the wall going, we know that's a wall, that's not God. And then I had to read that paper every single day. And it was, you know, I look back on it now, it's like, but taking that action was a little bit of willingness that cracked that veneer enough for something to get through to me so that I could start hearing what these actions do. And no one ever tried to tell me who God should be, what it should look like, how it should, what I should pray. There were no these or thous in it. You know, just say, you know, that's another part of getting more honest. My prayers today are much more honest. You know, I can say, you know, God, it is Jill again. I did it again. Please forgive me. And what I'm careful about is, I know that when I started seeking, I was in the program for some years, and I started seeking. My sponsor was very careful about not sending me to her church. But she gave me some resources and some avenues and another person to talk to, completely separate from all of this, that started that path for me. So I'm really careful with other people. You know, I don't try to say, oh, that's crazy as hell. Why would you believe in that? You know, it's like, if that's working for you and it is a power greater than yourself, I applaud it. You know, just hang on to it if it gives you peace. Now, if it's not giving you peace and it makes you want to go out and sacrifice little animals. I may have to tell you to get another sponsor. But overall, there's not too much that I'm not open to. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to lead the last two passages. The first one is from page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. Is it important for you to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery? Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He'll be more likely to follow your suggestions. And the final passage is on page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance.
I'm just going to read a line that I like that we don't read. and this is on page 95. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. That has been my experience. Thanks.
And I've only got two things to say. The paragraph on 94 that we read, that's my job as a sponsor. That's the sponsorship's duties, you know. And it's very clear, and it's like, if I'm doing any more than that or trying to add to it, I'm lying. And when it comes to the next paragraph we read, is it just comes down to, is a person willing? Is a person willing to do something different that's going to save them from the alcoholic death they talk about in the book? And that's a hard one sometimes. Thanks.
All right. Thank you both. We are now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. All right, the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And do we have any announcements?
Hello, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ralph.
This day is having the 14th annual picnic on September 18th at Woodstock Park in our Providence Avenue firehouse. It's from 10 to 4. Bring your family, it's a family event. Pet friendly, but make sure you have a leash. They will fine you the $50 fine. So bring your pet, I'm going to bring David. By a leash. Also, New Day has a new meeting on Sunday at 12:30. It's on a trial basis. He's doing very good, and it's not even in the book yet. So, go speak up.
All right, the Simple Actions Group on Monday, September 19th, right here, we'll be having our supper and a speaker. Food at 6, speaker at 7, Billy H. from Madison. It's always a wonderful time, so please come out and join us and spread the word. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. And new folks. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
My name's Mike, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike. Welcome.
We have literature available over here for anyone who would like it. Please see one of us if you're interested. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk. And reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Still stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Thank you guys again for sharing. And after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, right down on Colonial and 22nd. And will someone read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Yes, please.
I'm BJ, I'm an alcoholic.
You're BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then.
Thank you. Thank you. And now we'll wrap it up with the Lord's Prayer.
We gotta do something different. You wanna go in the front? Or we gotta make it. Oh, a little stuck on that side of the room. I guess we'll walk this way. Oh, there we go.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
I don't know why I thought about that.